Hello everyone, welcome to Web2 Runners to One by The Dapless. My name is Yinka. Today we have with us Gary from BlockTorch, and we're going to be talking about observing and analyzing smart contracts. A really fun conversation, rather. Hopefully it doesn't get too technical, because this is a particularly, or comes off to be particularly fairly technical product, but I'll be interested to see how Gary, you know, breaks down and simplifies a lot of the things we'll be discussing. So that being said, the man himself, hi Gary, please introduce yourself, tell us all of the really cool stuff you guys do over at BlockTorch, and we'll take it from there.
Hi, cool, thanks a lot, thanks for having me, and hi to everyone listening in. So quickly about us as a team and what we are doing at BlockTorch. So we are right now an early stage team of just the two founders, my co-founder Amin and myself. Amin has been an engineer since many years in large companies, having worked with observability practices in Web2 a lot. And I actually have a background in business development and venture capital, but started to code myself with the start of the pandemic, and then fell deep into the rabbit hole of Web3 and Solidity. And so together, we sat down together last March, so almost like a little bit more than 3 months ago now, and said, okay, we want to do something to contribute to making Web3 mass market ready. And for us, one core pillar for that is achieving better reliability, or enabling engineers and empowering engineers to build more reliable decentralized applications, and with that give users a better experience. And with that, basically the idea of BlockTorch was born. So what is BlockTorch actually about? So we're building an observability platform. That means a platform for the three pillars of observability that are metrics, logs, and traces. And we're starting to build that for smart contracts. But our vision is to build it for the whole decentralized stack. And maybe as you just said, maybe not going too deeply technically. So what does it mean to have like metrics, logs, and traces? You can kind of think about it as when you go to the doctor and you already have a problem, then he's just taking kind of like your symptoms and tries to understand, okay, you have a flu, or you have a heart attack, or whatever it is. But instead of doing that, like waiting until something that happens, you could, for example, start wearing an Apple Watch. And with that wearable, you would be able to see all the time kind of like what your health metrics are, like what's your heart rate, what's your blood pressure, these kind of things. And then you would be able to see, like to draw from that conclusions on what your health of your body is. And that's basically what we are trying to achieve with BlockTorch for decentralized applications. So engineers can see the status of the health of their applications as like a human wearing an Apple Watch, understanding what is going on.
Awesome. That is that. Hello, you there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Oh, okay, cool. Wanted to be sure like my internet was still great. Okay, cool. Yes, you know, a lot of what you said makes a lot of sense, and is highly correlated with what Amin talked about when he gave us the Explain Like I'm 5 session over on our Discord yesterday. And a lot of the things that, you know, kept standing out and kept jumping out at me when I was seeing the user interface, and one of the things he said at first from you could say, from my first impression was, this looks semi-similar to like Google Analytics and SEO and Google AdWords analytics, basically for like smart contracts.
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison. I think that the main kind of like difference is that Google Analytics, I would say, is more like, if you think about a Web3 equivalent, you would rather say Dune Analytics is more like an equivalent to what Google Analytics offers you. So that the user is a slightly different one. Usually it's not the engineer looking into the Google Analytics dashboards. It's like a business analytics or marketing person or so. And that's pretty much the same for Dune Analytics. The right web comparison would be more around tools like Datadog, Dynatrace, Sentry, Splunk. These are highly engineering-focused tools. So not a lot of people are super familiar with it. But yes, I totally get your point. I think it's a very valid comparison. I think the user or target group has to be taken into account with that as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, at the core of it, you know, again, the comparison in terms of functionality obviously isn't like one-to-one accurate, but at the core in terms of what it provides is metrics and understanding what my smart contract is doing, or my ad word, how it's performing, or like the health of whatever website. Basically, like, you know, the core of the functionality of BlockTorch is to provide metrics and to provide some form of clarity, if you will, as to what exactly my smart contract should be doing.
Totally. And a bit of a magic of that is also that basically the metrics, they are not shipped out of the box. So we call these metrics service level objectives. This is an observability or software reliability engineering wording for what we're doing. But service level objectives, they are a target that you set yourself. So if you want to compare it to Google Analytics that ships you out of the box, like, for example, the number of views or clicks, imagine you cannot just only see, okay, these are the number of clicks, but you can actually set a certain metric yourself. Like, you want to only see clicks by someone who, before clicking on your website, has done some specific action. Like, you can fine tune it a lot. Like, this is what we can provide with it.
Yeah, no, that is actually pretty cool. So again, one of the things I'm curious about, and you mentioned this, something you're saying, is it's primarily focused on like engineers and, of course, right? Is there a world that exists where, say, people who didn't particularly write their own smart contract? Because again, the blockchain is open. Like, all of the, pretty much every smart contract out there can be accessed, read, and built upon. So is there a world that exists where people who aren't 100% familiar with, you know, the technicalities of smart contracts can plug it into BlockTorch and get analytics and still like have some understanding of what's happening?
Yeah, so basically, in theory, so we will have a free tier will allow you to just play around with it. And in theory, everybody can just access it, make an account, access it, and start using it. I think with the current state of Web3, that is also feasible in a way that users in Web3 are kind of educated about what they're doing, because they have to educate themselves to understand what they're doing. So if you want to use a DeFi platform today, you kind of need to get what it is about. Otherwise, like, we'll not be able to use it properly. If we're thinking about mass market readiness, and this is the goal that we want to help to enable, we're speaking about millions and millions of users flocking into Web3. Like your neighbor, or if you have siblings or your parents that might have a Facebook account or whatever, but they're the ones that call you and say, like, I just deleted, I don't know, like, if I'm thinking about my mom, for example. She call me and say, like, I've just deleted the internet. And I'm like, no, like, it's fine. Like, yeah, the internet is still there. You just to re-log in. So if you're thinking about that state, if you reach that state in Web3 in a couple of years from now, I think we cannot expect users to educate themselves in a way that they would be able to use a tool like BlockTorch and also see the value from it. They would still be able to create an account and start using it. But the question is whether they would understand the value from it. And that's something I would doubt. And that's also something that would make the product totally different to what an engineer needs. And that's why our focus is on the engineers.
Yeah, no, that makes absolute sense. Again, I think while I was asking the question, I was thinking through the process, because a lot of what I tend to do with these conversations is to think while I'm, you know, talking and having these conversations is, obviously, anyone who is interacting with a smart contract needs to know what functions are in a smart contract, right? And that means you'll be semi-familiar with what's being done. And it obviously significantly increases the odds that you will be able to understand what BlockTorch is telling you, because you understand what the smart contract functions are. And so it's not a noob tool, because it cannot be a noob tool, right?
Yeah, so exactly. So to understand the smart contract functions or what they are doing, you kind of need to understand what a smart contract function is. And I said, like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe everyone who is going to use Web3 will be super educated about it. But I think at the end of the day, we will reach a state where also the front end and everything of a decentralized application is so nicely done that you will not even, you probably a user will not even realize that there is a smart contract in the back. It's just like you have all the benefits from using decentralized applications, like the fact that you own your data, the fact that you can earn a share of the project, whatever, without having to bother at all about what the hell is triggered at the back, how long a transaction took, what the transaction hash is, like these kind of things. I believe personally, and I hope so, because I think it's the way of how to unlock Web3 for the masses, is all these things will disappear behind the next layer of abstraction that is put on top of it. But if you're the engineer who wants to make sure that the application works and it works reliably, you need to have kind of like, on the one hand, an eagle eye about your architecture, but at the same time, also the opportunity to drill down into details of very deep data layers to ensure you understand what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. Yes, it's interesting. You know, again, you talked about, excuse me, you talked about how when you and I mean started working together, was like, yeah, we need to build some form of observability tool for Web3. And what were you, you know, when you were working on BlockTorch and like you had this vision and you were working towards it, you know, it was like the level of excitement that you were filled with, knowing that, oh my goodness, we're going to make a lot of people's lives a lot easier, because right now they have data to work with. So basically they're like data-driven development as they iterate on what's being built.
I think the first time where I really kind of realized that we're onto something was when we had a conversation with a lead engineer, a founding engineer of a large, or rather large, Web3 company today already. And he told us that they only have one or two smart contracts in production, but they have a lot of load on it. But he told us he's spending 30% of his time, like every week, 30% of his time scrolling through transactions on Etherscan.
Oh, wow.
And we were like, oh, wow, like this is like so much value that person is burning. That was like lead engineer. Like, I don't know what his salary was, but if we look into salaries for lead engineers in Web3, we're speaking about like somewhere in the six digits, and not even the lower six digits. I was like, damn, like that person is spending so much time there.
And like, yeah, so that's like going through a transaction on Etherscan with like not so user-friendly UI and UX, even for a lead engineer. Yes, he knows what he's looking for, but just imagine how much more easier those graphs and these numbers that are really nice pixels are just helping him visualize the problem, visualize what his smart contract is doing, and is able to drill down faster, you know, into what he needs to do. That is so cool. That is so cool. Congratulations, guys. We're rooting for you guys.
Thank you. Thank you a lot.
Awesome. So this one is very interesting, right? So the name BlockTorch. So I went to the logo and I looked at it. It's like, huh, that's, so we have like a block and then like a torch. Is it like you're trying to illuminate things for blockchain developers, eh?
Exactly.
Is that a nice play of words?
I like that you kind of like got it instantly, and a lot of people do.
Yeah.
How we came up with it was actually that the very first conversations we had with engineers, and so we started to speak to engineers and try to learn from them how they're doing things and how things are working for them. And there is a so-called saying, when you start on an idea and you're doing that exploration with potential customers, you need to look for repeatable sentences from different people. And the first thing we heard from engineers in Web3 to repeat was that once they go into production, they hope for the best. Mm. And there is also like a common kind of like sentence in software reliability engineering, which is hope is not a strategy. Like, it's kind of like the worst if you as an engineer hope instead of know about what's going on. And that's how we came up with the torch, because the torch is a symbol of hope. So it's like a place, like it's like the way how you bring fire to a dark place, to a cold place. It's also in like, for example, the Olympic Games, the torch is the symbol of hope. So that's why we kind of like very early on decided that we want to name the company BlockTorch, Block because of blockchain, and Torch because of hope. And we want to illuminate the space, bring light into an area where there is a lot of darkness and invisibility today. And that's why we thought the torch is a great thing. And we got a lot of positive feedback so far, gladly.
Yeah, no, the name is brilliant. The name is ridiculously important when building like a project, a product, a protocol, so that it provides instant clarity to whoever comes across it. And it also helps drive the mission, and it is very consistent with what is being done. And names are just ridiculously important. I love the name BlockTorch, and it's like, yeah, this is pretty cool.
Thank you. We're also working on some really cool swag, like with the name and everything.
Ooh.
Like we try to have like a really cool like thing developers love and like cool swag and stuff like
Okay, cool. I'll just DM you my address. I'll be expecting one of those. I'll be
that.
repping the Block Touch team for sure.
Nice.
All right, cool. Awesome. So, we've talked about, again, first off, we talked about how you've practically simplified and taken off a lot of stress from that lead engineer you mentioned, and so many other, mid-level junior lead senior engineers that will get to experience Blocktorch as time progresses. Why is the ability to observe smart contracts in itself important? Now, this is beyond the UI UX, however it is done, Blocktorch or Etherscan. Why do we need to observe smart contracts, and why is that important?
So basically, the keyword for observability always, no matter whether it's for smart contracts or not, is complexity. Complexity and scale, and they go hand in hand. So basically, once scale is increasing, no matter if it's like scale in terms of users or scale in terms of your product, that goes hand in hand with complexity increasing a lot. And when complexity sets in, this is the moment in time where you cannot depend on manual processes anymore. And if you look into Discord channels, and I'm sure you're as same as I, member of a lot of like Discord channels,
Yes.
there are people going crazy when things are not working, right? And that the process of having like a Discord channel where users just go wild when things start to not behave the way they should behave, and then the engineer starts kind of like trying to be a firefighter. And understand what the hell is going on and try to make sure that like as soon as possible it's fixed. This is chaotic and it can never lead to scale. It will always break. Like as a user, I'm 100% sure, and I have already done that. The second I am using a Web3 product or a service and there is some anomaly, I churn. Like I'm not using this platform anymore. I'm too scared. I lose trust in it instantly. Even if it's just like something the developers like, it's not even their fault, right? But in Web3, skepticism is extremely high, also because money is at stake. So you want to ensure that like things are working smoothly and that users have a great experience. And for that, observability tools are a must. So I said, like now we are at a stage where in Web3 we have a lot more complexity. Decentralized applications are running on multi-chains. There is the concept of upgradability of contracts. Very few users understand what that is, engineers do. Basically, a contract by itself is immutable. You cannot change it. That's true. That's what everyone thinks. Whatever is in a blockchain can never be changed. But the fact is that there is an architecture scheme that is called proxy contracts, where one contract interacts with the other. And these proxy contracts can indeed be exchanged. And that changes the functionality of your contract. Like users don't know that, but this can break things. And basically, to avoid that big things break, and I'm not speaking about security exploits only. I'm not speaking about hacks. I'm speaking about things where, like, there is a stupid bug that was not seen in one of the testing cases during development, and suddenly users run into that bug. And so basically, you want to ensure that you have tooling in place, that you automate that you are as efficient as possible, and especially that you manage the reliability proactively, not reactively. That's the kind of like same example I gave at the beginning with the doctor. Like, you don't want to wait until you're really sick and then go to the doctor. You want to ensure you kind of like manage it in a way that you know before you get sick that you're healthy.
Yeah, so that is so important. And what would you say is the distinction between observing smart contracts and auditing smart contracts? Now, I know that I think auditing has its own level of skill and expertise and perhaps its own level of attention to detail. And auditing hopefully tends to work around the bugs, work around, eliminating potential ill intent in this in the code that has been written. So where does like the is there a fine line? Is there a meeting point between auditing smart contracts and analyzing and observing smart contracts?
So I would say the main difference not only is kind of like that an audit is a snapshot in a point of time, and observability is happening ongoing. So with an audit, you can ensure, as you just said, that for example, there is no malicious code in that smart contract, that there are like no bad actors trying to implement something that is harmful. But an auditor can only look through the code that he receives. And an auditor is not going to kind of like run all kind of like edge case testing around it. Otherwise, if that all would be bulletproof, how could like a hack like the Onion Bridge hack happen? Like these things were audited by multiple audit firms, right? They only see kind of like the frame that they're presented, and then they kind of like try to make sure that it works, but they cannot see, like, it's not reality. Like reality is when things are in production, users start using it. And this is kind of like an effect throughout software. The software or users can always cause certain edge cases that no engineer or no auditor beforehand could even think of. And that's kind of like a big difference. Another thing that I like to mention here, and I think auditors are doing an amazing job, but we have spoken to a couple of auditors, and a lot of contracts have a lot of dependencies. And these auditors, they're not, first of all, they're not being presented with all the dependencies, because often the dependencies are from some other projects, and projects just kind of like give their own written smart contract in, handing in for the auditing. And so they are not even seeing all of the code that is actually then being used for the smart contract. But still, I don't think that audits are useless. I think audits are extremely important. I think they're very, very helpful, but they have a bit of a different kind of like function in terms of like a snapshot in time, making sure that there is no malicious code, while observability is like an ongoing process where you always make sure that there are no anomalies happening that can be caused through all kind of factors. As an example, an anomaly in your decentralized application can arise because the node that you're using is down or out of sync, or the API that you're connecting with it has some problem. An auditor would never spot that, right? Like an auditor looks at some smart contract code and says, okay, it's fine, publish it or deploy it to production.
The differences are pretty clear. Auditors aren't actively looking at the code in its live day-to-day, minute-to-minute, second-to-second interaction and performance. That is what the engineer who is observing the smart contract does. That's what he experiences. So, you know, and this is very interesting. You know, the topic of auditing and auditing smart contracts has just, you know, again, we look at these protocols who definitely had the resources or have the resources to fund auditing, and you know, auditors have audited the smart contract. They say, okay, this is good to go. And a couple weeks, months, maybe a couple years down the line, you know, there is like a hack in the protocol, and you say, like, you know, millions or billions of dollars are being drained out of it. And you're like, you know, where are these auditors when all of this, you know, is happening, right? You know, why would we even bother, you know, if the code is still susceptible to attacks? Now, obviously, I know it's not that simple because let's say when an auditor audits a smart contract, it significantly reduces the risk from, like, let's say 50, maybe 70% down to like 20. And again, you could say because code is written by humans, we can never hit 100% bug-free, non-exploitable code. And so, you know, what are your thoughts around that? And like the again, I think you did mention that about humans just bringing up edge cases because humans are humans and you just can't see everything.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's simply a fact that, first of all, it can get like not everything can be seen. And second, that software breaks. That's normal. That's not even, there's nothing bad. Imagine where, like, the world we would be in today if the first kind of like software that kind of like the first wave of the internet hype, for example, it would have never evolved. Like, imagine that scenario where we would have never improved on things. Like, improvements happen through destructions, and basically we need that to build more robust software. So that's normal. That's fine. Like, it's actually very evaluating the fact that things happen. That's also where like observability also comes into play, because you can learn a lot from it. Like, we will be able to tell exactly kind of like all from all the smart contracts that we're observing, okay, in these kind of smart contracts, these kind of anomalies tend to happen, or for these kind of like technology stacks or these kind of environments, these kind of anomalies are happening. And if you want to ensure that this is not happening to your code, these are the potential ways to mitigate it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's incredible the insights one gets from just like auditing, having your code audited and then, you know, observing them. So I think auditing and the observability platform you guys just built is another layer that helps people keep, you know, smart contracts secure, keep an eye, you know, on the tools that are out there and ensure that it is properly being watched and there aren't any blind spots to potential attacks.
I think another point to add to that also is that basically observability also allows you to take data-driven decisions in a product development process. So basically, product managers and engineers would look into like the observability data, and they would be able to draw conclusions from it for improving the product.
Yeah, cool. So what are three of perhaps one of the most exciting things you're working on BlockTorch and that, you know, you're just excited that this tool is out there. What are these two things that excite you about BlockTorch?
You mean from a product standpoint?
Yes, from a product standpoint, like a problem you're solving or like as a tool that you've built.
So basically we have defined three core user journeys that we're working on right now and that are already working in our closed alpha, which first is having an overview, and that by itself already we get some very nice feedback from alpha customers that finally they will have like a place where they see everything at a glance and don't have to hop around tools and switch context and everything. The second journey is to set service level objectives, which I have quickly touched upon before already, where we are enabling engineering or in general Web3 building teams to set metrics or targets on how their services should behave. And we'll be able to monitor based on that or observe based on that. And that's something that is not done easily today. Like some teams, they're building in-house build solutions using indexes and everything. So there's nothing that really provides that out of the box in that kind of like quality and sophistication. And the third part is root cause analysis. So as I said before, it's great and important to have an overview, but you also need to be able to drill down into the details quickly and understand the context around it. And that's what we're also providing and building on right now. And with that, engineers and product managers or in general users of BlockTorch will be able to dig into data very quickly and to get the right information in a very fast way.
Awesome, cool. Yeah, so basically it's taking what you've built and just making it as efficient as possible for everyone who gets to use it.
Exactly.
Awesome. All right, so Gary, again, I've asked a decent amount of questions and some of them you've done justice to all of them. And it just comes back to the importance of providing, you could say, data-driven further development of smart contracts, you know, in Web3. So tell us about logs and I mean, maybe, you know, when now I explained, like on 5 session yesterday, we talked about logs, we talked to each other, you know, a bunch of the features, in terms of the user interface that BlockTorch has been built with. So tell us about logs and one of the cool things that what are the things that you think are really cool about logs as you provide them to smart contract engineers and more also, two more cool features that, as far as the UI is concerned, again, we can't see the UI because, like, this is Twitter Spaces, right? We had that session back on Discord, and most of the people who were here weren't there yesterday, right? So tell us, like, maybe two more features that you think is really cool and, like, what they do.
Sure. So, and maybe one thing for those of you listening that are interested in how it looks, you can actually head over after we're done with the Spaces to our BlockTorch Twitter account. And there, over the last weeks, we have posted some videos about our progress, where you can also see some of our UIs, and maybe some things might then be clearer to you. So yeah, I don't know exactly what I mean told you about the logs, but I think what is really cool about the logs and the way how we are going to present it is that you will understand about all the events and the transactions that your code basically emitted, And with that, you will be able to really see in a very structured way every kind of single interaction, like not only kind of like did the transaction happen or not, but all the metadata around it, and all the metadata around it in a human readable way. So basically, if you have a smart contract and you look into the data that it emits from the chain, it's all encoded. So you only see some hex strings, which is not readable. But we are basically working on making it human readable, and then everyone will be much faster in understanding what is going on.
Awesome. It's really exciting to come across these projects. So thank you so much, Gary. Most of the questions that I came in here with, you know, you've just kicked them out of the water like easily, and it's super exciting to listen to the excitement in your voice while we were having this conversation on the problem BlockTorch is solving in this space. And really happy I'm rooting for you guys. Congratulations once more. And
Thank you.
It goes up from here. Yeah. So everyone joining in again, we're rounding up real quick. Today has been a really, really fun session. I just enjoyed chatting with Gary. Even more so enjoyed chatting with Amin yesterday over at our Discord. So everyone here, we just are concluding the session we're having with BlockTorch on observing and analyzing smart contracts. Gary has done us, you know, given us the pleasure of just talking to us about the utility of analyzing smart contracts, the differences between analyzing observing smart contracts and like even auditing themselves. And the distinction has been very, very helpful to me, at least, and I hope it's been helpful to you guys as well. So Gary, one final question before we sort of like close the curtain here will be, I've asked a decent amount of questions. What is one that I must have missed that you are almost always excited to talk about, or you want everyone to know about BlockTorch? I mean, assuming I miss that, you know, would you mind sharing it? And like, how would you answer that? So what is that one thing, or maybe two or three, that is a must know, if you will?
Yeah, I think maybe one question that now after the talk some listeners might have is, how can they get their hands on it and start exploring it themselves? Basically, engineers usually like to try out tools and see how they work. So yeah, you could just head over to blogtorch.xyz. We do have an early access program. We'll be in touch with you as soon as you sign up to that. And we're working towards our public alpha release as well. So that will happen in a couple of weeks. So stay tuned on our social medias like Twitter, or join our Discord, and then you will be able to see as soon as we release, and then you will just be able to get your hands on it and start looking at it and using it. And we'd love to get your feedback.
Awesome. So you guys, you heard, man. If you're curious about getting your hand on BlockTorch and like playing around, you know, smart contract and trying to get, you know, some illumination on what your smart contract does, head over to BlockTorch's Twitter. So that is at BlockTorch. Then you can find like all of the links, the link to the website, and then you can like even probably DM Gary yourself, and I'm sure he'll be happy, more than happy to walk you through some of the ways you can get you set up. All right. Thank you so much, Gary. Thank you so much, every single one of you joining us today in today's session of the Web3 1:1 by the Dapplist. We just concluded a conversation with Gary, one of the co-founders of BlockTorch. And again, he's taking us through an amazing ride of a riding clarity of the BlockTorch tool, even though in itself, the BlockTorch tool is providing clarity for smart contracts developers. And it's just been fun. I'm super excited about what the future holds for Web3, what the future holds for crypto, and all of the really, really, really cool things founders like yourself are building. So thank you again, Gary. Thank you again, every single one of you for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, and we'll be seeing you next week on our next session of Web3 1:1. Remember to follow us at the Dapplist on Twitter and join our Discord for really fun alpha. Now, you see, Gary talked about sharing merch. Perhaps, you never really know, maybe we'll be giving out some BlockTorch merch, you know? You don't want to miss that. So join in, and I will see you guys in the next one. Take it easy. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you. Thank you.